Hey guys, this is A to Z Podcast. I'm Austin.
And I'm Zach.
We got a quick episode for you guys here today. It's, kind of an everything episode, so we're going to touch on a lot of different stuff. We'll just go ahead and tell you guys how to find us again, as usual. You just got to go to iTunes, type A, the number 2Z in the search bar, hit enter, scroll down to the bottom, and we're the only ones in the podcast section in iTunes. You can also find us online at our website at a to z podcast spokane.podomatic.com, and if you need to know how to spell all that, just go back to one of our other podcasts and it's all spelled out for you, easy to find. But definitely the easiest way to find us is on iTunes. So getting straight into it, there was some big news that happened recently. We weren't able to cover it because we were doing other podcast shows, but today we can kind of touch on it a little bit, and that's the Seattle Seahawks trading for Percy Harvin. How do you feel about that, man?
Well, it was quite shocking. I mean, we were talking and we were just playing some games, and all of a sudden you're freaking out and saying we just traded for Percy Harvin. I can't believe it that we would. It doesn't seem like what we would do as an organization, but we did, and it's a big move. We signed him to a big time contract. And I think what the organization is realizing is that we have a window here and we got to capitalize on it right now.
Yeah, we got to go ahead and do it while everybody's still cheap. Most of our core players, you know, are still on their rookie contracts, and we got to try to make the most of what we can, you know? So I think that's definitely what we're doing. Do you think it's more of a good thing that we traded away our first pick, or more of a bad thing?
I'm for it, because who could we have drafted with the 25 pick that would be better than Percy Harvin right now, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I just look at it as us moving up for the best receiver in this draft, and to move up, we swapped spots with our first, and then we gave a 7th and a 3rd next year, or a 4th, or whatever it was, and, I mean, that's really flipping cheap for what we got, you know? I mean, he's proven. It's not like it's an unknown commodity, and everybody will say he's injury prone, which I don't think he is. Last year was the only year he's been injured for multiple games, and that was when he got hurt against us, and he hurt his ankle.
His migraine issue has been solved. You know, he hasn't had migraines in a few years, so that was kind of a problem he had early in his career. Now, he just got a bad bum ankle last year. I mean, there's risk. I mean, there's risk with trading any player, you know? He'd get injured and we'd be screwed anyway, so we're in a better position now than when before we had him, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, he might be considered a bad teammate in Minnesota, but if he's going to become a bad teammate in Seattle, I think it'll take at least 2 years for him to start maybe showing signs of it, because like the first year will definitely be a honeymoon period between him and Russell Wilson, and either they're going to work really well together, or if they do start butting heads a little bit, by the time stuff like that comes out, he'll be in like the 3rd, 4th, or 5th year of his contract, which is the end of it. And at that point, if you want to trade him or cut him or whatever, you can do that. And so I'm not really worried about him butting heads with everybody, and Pete Carroll's a player's coach anyways, so he'll make them happy.
Yeah. He has no problems dealing with guys who are problem players, you know, so it's not that big of a deal for us to have somebody who could be considered a bad teammate, you know, so it doesn't really worry me that much, the teammate side of it. And let's talk about his deal real quick. A lot of people I've talked to are complaining that we way overpaid Percy Harvin, and I think we may have just a little bit overpaid him, but I think he kind of had to get him, and just be thankful that it's not as bad of a deal as the Mike Wallace deal in Miami, you know?
Yeah, I don't think we overpaid, because overpaying is what Miami did for Mike Wallace, and we didn't do that, so I don't think that we overpaid, but that's just my opinion.
Yeah, I think it makes it a really interesting wide receiver core for us next year, you know?
Yeah.
We got Sidney Rice on the outside, now Percy Harvin kind of in the inside with Golden Tate, who formed a really good relationship with Russell Wilson last year. And then now we also have Zach Miller at tight end, and that's a pretty formidable group, along with Marshawn Lynch in the backfield too still. So
yep, not too shabby. I'll take it, dude.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited for next year, and we'll definitely be talking about the Seahawks a lot more next week, because it'll be the next Seahawks podcast. It had just been a few weeks, so we decided to bring it up. But moving on, me and you have both been playing a lot of Skyrim, and the next installment in the wonderful Elder Scrolls franchise is going to be Elder Scrolls Online, and kind of wanted to bring it up and talk about it, see how you feel going to an MMO is going to affect the franchise.
I don't think it's gonna do that well, honestly. I mean, like you're reading that article on Gamefly, and I also read it, and it makes total sense, you know. There's so many different options in, like, the Skyrim or the Elder Scrolls universe that if you have a bunch of people online playing, there's going to be a million different things that collide, and with a world in the Elder Scrolls realm that is so reactive to what you choose, I don't know how they're going to make that work with, like, massive parties and, you know, massive numbers of people and whatnot. I just don't see how that's going to work.
It's a tough one. The only one, because, like, the scope of those games are, like, you're a world saver in every one of those games. And I guess they could tone down the scope, you know, so, like, it's not like the world hinges on whatever you do. But just reading about, like, what the story's going to be about, it's going to be about, like, a Daedric prince who comes in and steals your soul. So, like, right off the bat, that makes you very important. And in a game where there's millions and millions of other players, potential players playing, like, it could really mess any decision that you want to do up, you know? Like, you kill a main person off in the game, and it's like, well, I didn't want to kill that person off, you know? Like, thanks a lot.
Yeah, and totally. I think, and we already talked about this in a previous podcast, but I think the way to go would have been, you know, like a multiplayer option where you could team up with like four friends or two friends or whatever and do it that way versus a huge MMO atmosphere. I don't think MMO was the way to go, but...
Yeah, it's kind of disappointing to see him go this way. Now, obviously, if it comes out and it's awesome, then definitely be playing a ton of it. But it's just got so many problems for it coming up that I just don't know how they're going to be able to do it. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. I'm not having high hopes for it, you know? I'm just kind of letting what happens, and just see what happens from that. I guess another thing that I'm not real happy about is that they're only releasing the Mage and, like, Warriors Guild quests, and then they're like, well, later... We'll release the Thieves and the Assassin's Guild, and it's okay, well, I don't even want to play it at the release then, because I don't really care for the Mage or the Warriors Guild. I want to play the Assassins or the Thieves.
Yeah, the Thieves Guilds are my favorite missions, you know, and to not be able to do those, like, right off the bat, it's like, well, okay, well, then what are we doing here, you know? But it'll be interesting to see, like, what... how they fix all these problems that we can kind of see going out, because Bethesda makes some of the best games that are out there now, and I don't see them just turning out a half-assed product just to appease an MMO crowd, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I don't know. Trying to hop on the MMO bandwagon, but we'll see.
Moving on, we're going to talk a little bit about music, it's not a subject that we brought up on the podcast yet, and it's kind of a dead week, so we figured have some filler with it. We're just going to talk about a few bands, and if you're interested, check them out, or if you do check it out and it's not your thing, well, that's too bad. But first one I think is a pretty obvious one, is we'll just talk about a quick little bit of Enter Shikari. You're actually coming down here to go see their big concert in next week, so that'll be really interesting. I know it's my probably favorite band and one of your favorites.
Yep, for sure.
And it's a little bit more of a electronic kind of mixed with a post-hardcore, so a lot of chugging guitars and a lot of sweet synth leads. They've turned into a little bit more political, so you got to be able to either accept that or look past it if you don't always agree with their political statement. But overall, I mean, it's incredible live when you see them, and I mean, it's just not a band that's about partying or anything like that, so if you're looking for a little something more deep lyrically, then it's definitely a band that you want to check out.
Yeah, I mean, if you're into this whole dubstep craze, then you'll probably end up enjoying them at least a little bit, you know. I mean, you might not fall in love with them, but they'll at least be tolerable to you, because they're kind of, I don't want to say they're like the birth of dubstep, because they're not, but I mean, they definitely helped push it along, at least in our scene, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Like, and what they do is really, like, I guess, quote-unquote groundbreaking, because, like, I mean, when that first, their first record came out in the States, like, a few years later, there's tons of bands doing what they sounded like back then, and they're always progressing, so they're kind of, like, at the forefront of what a hybrid post-hardcore and electronic band would definitely sound like, you know? Yeah. So if you're at all interested in any kind of dubstep music, I would suggest checking them out. It's got a lot of, it's their actual songs as opposed to just like a build up breakdown thing.
Yeah.
Which a lot of dubstep artists are just, that's kind of what they do.
Yeah. So. It's just, if you're feeling the dubstep vibe, they kind of have that vibe going on, but they're in, you know, a band versus like a DJ.
Yeah. And again, they have a few CDs out, and they'll actually be recording a new one here over the summer, and then it'll probably be released in the fall or winter of later this year, too. So definitely be excited for that. Kind of the next one I wanted to talk about was a band that I was a little hesitant to get into just because, like, I'm not a fan of the genre, really, but ended up being, I mean, one of my favorite CDs of last year, and that's The Wonder Years. Quite an interesting name. They just literally took it from that 80s and 90s TV show. And it's just straight pop punk. I mean, it's not more or less than that. Lyrics about kind of growing up and how much it sucks to be like a, you know, a white male 20-year-old dude growing up in suburbia, which is something I can relate to. The songs are really good, catchy. I mean, it's pop punk, so you got to be able to like that, which I really do. So if it's something that you can tolerate, I mean, they're one of the biggest pop punk bands in the scene right now. I mean, they go on huge tours all across the world. So if you haven't checked it out, I would suggest just jumping right into with their last record that they released, and they have another one coming out in May that I'm really, really excited for. So if you want to check out maybe something that's not has to do with electronic, but maybe just a little bit more straightforward pop punk, definitely check out The Wonder Years.
Yeah, for sure. They are exactly that. Like you said, no more, no less. You know what you're getting. So if you go in with a mood like, hey, I want to listen to something that's full of pop and punk, you know, they'll definitely, you know, satisfy your urge there. I agree. They're pretty good. I haven't listened to it as much as you have. I'm sure this summer I'll put a lot of plays on it, though.
Yeah.
Late at night, you know.
Yeah, it's one of those, like, you just listen to it, and you first hear the songs, and the choruses are good enough that you can learn them pretty quick, but then, like, you start digging into a little bit more of the lyrics, and the lead singer guy's name is Dan Campbell, but he goes by Soupy, and he really writes a lot of things about, like, hey, these are my friends, and this is what it's like growing up in a small suburban town in Pennsylvania. And I'm not from the East Coast, but I am from a relatively small town in Washington, and there's something about it that just kind of, it's more than just a super simple song to me, and it's really good
in
that
kind
of aspect. Another one, Death Cab for Cutie is probably one of the biggest bands right now, just in general. Like, they're all over the pop charts. But 10 years ago this year, the lead singer, Ben Gibbard, decided to do an electronic side project with one of the biggest electronic artists kind of at the time. And what ended up coming out was the Postal Service. Now, their one album, Give Up, came out, like I said, 10 years ago today. They are re-releasing it with, like, a deluxe edition, and they are doing a tour around the United States. I think it's this summer. I'm still half thinking about going to see them. If you're into electronic music that's not club electronic music, so there's no, like, big heavy beat behind it, just like atmospheric electronica, then definitely check out the Postal Service. I think most people have heard of them. They have some really popular songs, but if it's something that maybe you were a little bit younger and you missed the wave when it came out 10 years ago, check it out. It's an awesome electronic album. And plus, you know, it's not so super popular that you can still maintain your underground street cred.
Yeah, for sure. Keep your designer frames on your face, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, no, I highly recommend them too. I remember being in high school and my friends were, you know, listening to Death Cab for Cutie, and then they got into Postal Service and stuff, and Like you said, it's not huge, heavy bass drops or anything like that, but it's definitely good music to listen to nonetheless, yeah. You know?
I mean, just from like an electronica standpoint, it's awesome. So if you like electronic music, or if you just hate club music but you want to try electronica, give it a shot, man. It's awesome.
Yeah, so. Exactly.
Moving on, those are just some three quick bands. Last weekend was the big UFC fight between George St. Pierre and Nick Diaz. And George St. Pierre put on a beatdown on Nick Diaz like I thought he would.
Like most people thought he would.
Yeah, like most people thought he would. Actually, there was these kids that came into my work. Well, kids, they were 18. And I asked them who they thought would win because I heard them talking. And they said, oh, Nick Diaz is going to kill George St. Pierre. George St. Pierre hasn't fought a guy with this cardio. George St. Pierre hasn't fought a guy with this great Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And I'm thinking, do these kids watch UFC? Like, do they not understand what George St. Pierre is? And lo and behold, they weren't around when I found out that George St. Pierre won, so I couldn't rub it in their face.
Yeah, he stood no chance. George St. Pierre is the man in MMA. I mean, he just... Yeah.
He's like one of the three best fighters. It's some order of John Jones Bones, Anderson Silva, and George St. Pierre. It's one of those three. All three of them are like some of the best fighters in MMA.
Yeah, exactly.
But a lot of people call GSP out because he won't go up a weight class and fight Anderson Silva. And why would he, man? He's in his weight class. Why would he do that? But
I agree. There's no benefit for him. I mean, he's already renowned as one of the greatest fighters ever. So why does he need to go and tarnish his legacy, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That, and I do have a complaint about GSP. His fights are a little boring.
Oh, for sure.
He's not a finisher. He is a grinder, so he's going to out-wrestle you. He's going to take you down. He's going to beat you up. He's never going to hit you with something that's going to knock you out, even though he does have the ability to. He's just all technique, and he wants to punish you, and that's exactly what he did to Nick Diaz.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but this isn't really what we wanted to talk about all that much regarding Nick Diaz. He came out, you know, and let it be known that he hasn't filed taxes ever.
Yeah.
Not like, just in, like, last year. Ever.
Yeah, which is, what are you doing? He's just a crazy person, you know?
He's not making $10,000 a year, you know?
Yeah, no. He's definitely making millions of dollars a year, you know? And I just don't get it. Like, what does he think he can accomplish? Because the question was asked, because he said that if he loses, he's going to retire. This will be his last fight. And so he lost, and so then people asked him, is he going to retire? And if you retire, what are you going to do? And he said something along the lines of, I don't know, in a year I'll probably be in jail. I've never paid taxes. And it's like, what? Like, Dana White's like asking him, like, what are you doing, man? Are you okay? Is there something wrong with you?
Right.
But he's a... He's my least favorite kind of person in MMA, and somebody who just talks a bunch of BS and just tries to really pump themselves up, and I don't think that it's really needed in there. I understand that you got to have villains, you know, like kind of draw the storylines, but...
Yeah, he was just talking mad game, that's all.
Yeah, but we'll switch in somebody who has mad game. Let's talk about Derrick Rose. Unfortunately, last year he blew out his knee in the playoffs, you know, and... I mean, that definitely sucks that it happened, but he has been cleared now by the doctor, but hasn't played.
Yeah, and I kind of have a bit of a problem with this. I don't mind so much that, you know, he needs to take time to recover from his injury. I understand you blow out your ACL, the doc says, hey, it's going to take 8 to 9 months for you to get better, and then you need to take an extra month or two to really feel confident. I understand, but at the same time, the doctor's like, dude, you're ready to go. And he's just like, well, I don't want to play until I feel confident that I can dunk off my left foot. And it's like...
Which is the knee that he blew out. It was his left knee that he...
Yeah, and it's just like, come on, dude, get it together. You're a professional athlete. You're getting paid millions and millions of dollars. I understand you need to protect your investment because your knees is, you know, you make money off of those knees. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if I was a fan of the Bulls, I would be pretty upset with him. I'd be like, man, come on, let's get it together. But again, I understand because his brother, you know, told the Bulls, hey, you guys need to do something in free agency. You need to get some more pieces in here for Derek because, you know, his brother's his manager. And they didn't do anything this year. And so Derek's like, well, why should I come out and, you know, put myself at maybe a little risk, even though the doctor said that he was ready to play, you know, when they didn't go out and try to help me, you know?
Yeah. I just don't get, like, his thought process, you know? Like, it's the same thing I have a problem with his game. Like, I will say that he's really, like, he's one of the best point guards in the game, but I hate how he plays. Like, it's like an ISO game where he just stands at the top of the key and dribbles, drives, penetrates, and tries to beat his guy. And I hate it. It's like, it's boring basketball, you know? And it's like, it's that selfish attitude is really showing through right now that he won't come back and help his team make a push for the playoffs. Even I think they are in the playoffs right now, you know, like if it, the season ended today, but he won't do it because he thinks like, well, I got to protect myself. It's like, there's, you're at no more risk now than just anybody else playing the game, you know?
Right. Yeah. Like, I mean, the doctors cleared you. They're not going to clear you.
Yeah, a knee injury could happen to anybody at any time, so you're at no more risk than anybody else, but yet you won't do it? Like, what? Why? You know, like, I understand what you're really trying to do here. You're just trying to... I don't get it, you know?
Yeah, I feel you. So, you know, I am glad that he's better because with him being in the league makes basketball a better product, but I agree, I'm not a huge fan of his ISO, do this, do that. It's kind of... sort of a little bit how LeBron was in Cleveland, but he had to be that way in Cleveland, and now he's with players that are, you know, as good as him, or, you know, not as good as him, but on the same level, and now he's like, this is awesome, I can just pass the ball 30 times a game and we'll still win, you know, and that's the kind of basketball I enjoy, is kind of what the Heat are doing right now.
Yeah, or like even the Clippers a little bit with like...
Sure.
I think that how Chris Paul plays the point guard, he's the best point guard in the NBA right now, you know, where he will take his shots when he needs to, but he just throws up those lobs and lets Blake Griffin slam down on everybody, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I totally agree.
Yeah, but let's talk about the Heat a little bit. They are on an incredible win streak. They are right now, I think, 10 wins away from the all-time record from the 71-72 Lakers. You think that they're not going to lose another game the rest of the season?
Realistically, I think they probably could go to up till the playoffs without losing a game if they wanted to. You know, it's all what they want to.
Yeah. I think what this streak is remarkable because now they're getting to the point now where every team is taking their best shots at them. You know, they're not getting half-assed effort anyways, and they weren't getting that so much anyways because they're the Heat. You know, everybody wants to beat them, but it's pretty incredible. Like, I mean, that game, we're recording this on a Tuesday, so the game last night against the Celtics where LeBron hit that game-winning shot with like 10 seconds left to go, and when he took it, like, and I'm watching it, there was no doubt that it wasn't going in, you know, like, it just rattled itself in, like, he willed it down into the hoop, and then he guarded Paul Pierce, who jacked up a three, and then when he jacked it up, it was, I mean, LeBron was right on him, you know?
Yeah, like, for sure. It's awesome. I mean, I'm not a Heat hater. I know you're not a Heat hater either.
Nope.
I think it's absolutely ridiculous when people say that the Heat now aren't on the same levels as the Bulls or the Celtics or the Lakers or, you know, all that nonsense, because they are. They're one of the greatest teams in NBA history, so just deal with it.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of talent that they have. I mean, Dwayne Wade takes games off now, and he couldn't afford to do that before, and LeBron just is like, he's certified himself as the best single basketball player right now, you know? Like, there's nobody that's playing basketball better than him, and what he's able to do is remarkable. Like, He's a point guard, or he's a power forward, small forward that plays point guard, you know, like all he does is distribute the ball. Like, it's pretty awesome, you know, like, and to see him do all this and at such a high level is really, really awesome.
Yeah, we were talking and you know, whatever LeBron wants to do, he's going to do. If he wants to lead in assists, he'll lead in assists. If he wants to lead in points, he'll lead in points. Rebounds, he'll lead in rebounds. It doesn't matter. He's that good. He can pick and choose what he wants to do. So he can turn it on, turn it off, do whatever.
Yeah. We'll shift in sports. We'll talk about this proposed rule changes that they're making in the NFL. I think they all passed today. One of them was actually getting rid of the tuck rule.
You know, when it's your team that benefits from it, you're like, yeah! And when it's your team that doesn't...
Yeah, see, his arm was moving forward.
You know, you're like, this is the gayest rule ever. So, I mean, it really doesn't matter to me all that much. How many times are you honestly affected by the tuck rule? You know, maybe once a season or something.
Yeah.
So, we'll see what happens. I don't think this is the biggest rule change of them all. Get rid of it. It's fine. It doesn't hurt my feelings. The rule change that really matters is this new one having to deal with the running backs.
Yeah, the basic rule change is if a running back is in the open field and he lowers the crown of his head to run over a defender, now that is going to be a 15-yard personal foul, you know, which is really interesting because, I mean, there's a whole culture of running backs, which is the truck stick, I mean, which is lowering your head and powering forward, you know? So to outlaw this, it's going to be... I mean, we have a power running back.
Yeah, it's going to affect Lynch.
Yeah, Marshawn Lynch dips his head. It'll be interesting to see how they do this. Now, is it going to be like something where it's like the dude's like running up on a cornerback and he truck sticks him over? Or if he... Is that going to be a penalty? Well, maybe. But or is it when he's like running up the middle and he's got dudes all around him and then he dips his head down? Now, if that's a penalty, then I'll have a problem with it. I understand that they're just trying to protect players. Okay, let me rephrase that. The NFL does not care about players whatsoever.
They're just trying to save face.
They're just trying to save face so that when they get this billion-dollar lawsuit on them, that it can be... They can say, well, see, we took steps to prevent this.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
And it's that's true. All they care about.
I absolutely agree with you. This rule, you know, it's kind of on the fence for me, depending on how they call it. Like you said, if it's a running back versus a safety, you know, like Steven Jackson and Earl Thomas. If Steven Jackson just decides to plow into Earl Thomas, okay, I can kind of understand if you want that to be a penalty because you want to keep that player safe. But, you know, if Steven Jackson's, like, running and he has, like, K.J. Wright and Wagner coming at him and Earl Thomas and just everybody bearing down on him, if he wants to get down and power through for another couple yards, that can't be a penalty. That would be utterly ridiculous.
Yeah. And, like, I think that the rule change that they need to do is that you can challenge personal fouls. You know, like, we're getting to the point now where, like, it's such a big, big part of the game. Why can't we say, like, hey, that is altering the field by 15 yards.
Right.
And it can make it break. Why can't we challenge that, you know, and overview that and have an actual look at it? Because I remember multiple times last year where just one example is that San Fran game when Cam Chancellor laid the smack down on Vernon Davis there right as he was catching a ball. It wasn't a penalty. It was a clean hit, but yet it happened so quickly that they were penalized for it. And if we could review it, it would have, I mean, we won that game anyway. So, it probably wouldn't have affected the outcome, but.
Yeah, or what about stuff like in the Miami game where Earl Thomas is already in the air and then he barely, like, touches Ryan Tannehill and he gets a penalty called on him. I mean, I know reviewing that probably wouldn't have changed that call, but it's just like, come on, guys.
I know. Like, I think that's the rule change that needs to be made is that they can review these personal fouls and stuff like that. But I don't think that'll ever change. I just think it's the NFL trying to, prepare itself for these mega lawsuits
inevitable. I absolutely 100% agree. They're just trying to save their butts. I mean, they're a business and they're doing what they think's best for their future.
Mm-hmm. They're just trying to prevent, you know, what they think is a catastrophic lawsuit. But other than that, those were the only two rule changes that are taking place. There were some other small moves by the Seahawks that we'll kind of get into next week. We're just going to kind of keep this one short, just get something out there for you guys. Again, spread the news if you are digging it. and, you know, tell your friends, especially if they're big Seahawks fans. We had that, that is a fourth of our content.
Yeah, it's probably probably a half, because we talk about it a lot now, and we talk about it a lot next week, and so, you know, just find guys that love video games and love the sea chickens, and that is instant recipe for success right there.
Yeah, so spread the word, and we'll appreciate it. We'll keep this one short, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
Yeah, so we appreciate it. I'm A.
And I'm Z.
We'll talk to you later.
Bye.